Happy Star Wars Day!
Happy Star Wars Day! Yay! Can you tell me what it means, actually?
Yes, so it's Star Wars Day today because it's May 4th, so it's May the 4th be with you.
So clever. Thank you very much.
How are you going to be spending your Star Wars Day today?
Oh, let's see. What am I going to be doing today? Oh, you know what? A tattoo studio here in town, who you and I both have seen an artist there, is doing Star Wars tattoos today. So maybe I will go and see Heather.
Ooh,
Get that first Star Wars tattoo, Fennec. I don't know. Maybe today's the day.
See, I was thinking about that when I was watching Rise of Skywalker. Was when you're going to get your Star Wars tattoo.
Well, I had planned to get it, but both Heather and I had kidney stone issues over the last month, coincidentally, so we needed to reschedule. But she works at, and I'll give a shameless plug, at Regeneration Tattoos here in Boston. And I know they're doing, like I said, the Star Wars Day, so I can't think of a better day than today.
Yeah, I think that's nice.
Nice, yay!
Well, before we start, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Dorkside Cantina Star Wars podcast. I had the opportunity to be on that podcast with my friend Bud, who did my John Williams tattoo. And we talked about Kylo and Star Wars in general and what my fandom means to me. So if you want to hear me talk more but not have to talk to my mom, hey. Go listen to that.
I could feel you like tiptoeing around what to say there, but I get it. It's, you know, sometimes it's better to talk about Star Wars with somebody who actually is equally into Star Wars as you are. And I know Bud is like that. So, hey, Bud.
Well, I'd say it's nice because him and I don't always agree on everything. I think to the levels that you and I do.
Yeah.
So it's nice to kind of almost have to convince someone that Kylo is a good character instead of us where we're like, yeah, it's just obvious.
Yeah. Hello. Especially the movie we're going to talk about today. It is 100% obvious how amazing he is. So,
yeah. Do you want to start with some fast facts?
Yes, I do. Because as I have shared many, many times, The Rise of Skywalker is my favorite Star Wars film. So let's get into it.
All right, so Rise of Skywalker came out in 2019, directed by J.J. Abrams. And if you remember, J.J. Abrams directed Force Awakens, but he did not direct The Last Jedi. So he came back. Its budget was $416 million, which puts it as like one of the most expensive films ever made.
Holy night. Okay.
And it made just over $1 billion. So it's actually the lowest grossing Star Wars film in history.
Well, I mean, but is that partly because of time lapsed? Like it's had less time to make money or no?
No, not really, because I was thinking about that when I was watching it. If perhaps, you know, you have to think about the timeline. It came out in December 2019. And then what happened in February of 2020?
COVID.
So I thought for a second, like, did that have any effect on it? But at the same time, like, that's the normal length for a movie that size to be out of 3 months. And I was seeing it all the way up until the lockdown happened. So, of course, it would just be me in the theater alone. But I think it had enough time on its own in the theater to like make that $1 billion.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned COVID, and I think I've mentioned it in another podcast, but you and I at the time were living about 2 hours apart from each other, and I had driven over to Orlando, where you were at the time, to go and see it with you. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. We went and saw it at Disney Springs.
That's right. And then But on the way home, when I was driving back to Tampa, where we were at the time, I heard the first news story about the coronavirus on NPR on the way back. And I remember, and it was really late at night, and I remember listening to the story and thinking, something bad is going to happen. And I'm not saying that I'm a clairvoyant, but just the way that they were reporting was pretty intense. And the very next day, I got Papa up, and he and I went to Costco and got cold medicine because that's how clueless we all were, right? We just thought it was going to be like a cold or something like that. So I stocked up on baby Advil and NyQuil. But it really stands out to me as a bookmark in that year that that was kind of the last thing you and I did together out in public for a really long time. So
Yeah. No,
hearts.
that was definitely the last film that I saw in theaters before COVID hit. And I think I didn't see another movie in the theaters until like 2 years later. Whenever Rogue One came back out in the theaters, so before Andor came out. So by that time I was living in Denver. So like that's crazy to think. I do think it's funny because you bring that up. I do remember when you got home, you texted me and you were like, I just listened to an NPR story about bats in China.
That's right. That's what it was about. And we were afraid because we like bats. And we were worried, or I was worried, that they were going to start killing bats, which they did. But anyhow, if I don't think we've ever mentioned this, I am a bit of a paranoid prepper. So I'm always ready. I'm always ready to fight. So that's a little bit about me. But enough about me. Back to you, Finnick, and telling us more information about the movie.
Well, I will say this isn't really information about the movie, but it is the most glaring thing to me. This movie is an epileptic nightmare.
Tell us more.
Just the first like 5 minutes and then the last like 20 minutes of this movie have like the flashiest lights I've ever seen in a movie before. And I think it's interesting because at the time, for those that don't know, we both have epilepsy, but at the time I hadn't had my first seizure yet. So I think about how many times I went and saw this movie in the theaters. And like even then I was like, damn, there's a lot of flashing lights going on.
Yeah, I think I was the only one of us that had been having regular seizures at that point. So, yay me. I don't know. Maybe it was because I was so emotionally wrapped up in the story or because of the very strong seizure medication that I take. It didn't bother me as much, but now I'm definitely, next time I see it, I'll be a little bit more cautious.
Yeah, it's, I would say like for me, like I'm very triggered by flashing lights. So it doesn't really like affect me that much, but it does make me get a little on guard and like overly prepared. But then again, like for this movie, I saw it 10 times in the theaters. So clearly I like it. And I'm willing to possibly endure a seizure for it. I'll do anything for Star Wars if we haven't learned that.
Yeah, I think that's pretty clear. So, oh, but wait. One more thing before we jump into the actual movie. This means I have seen all the Star Wars movies, Fennec. Can you believe this? It's
So
happened. It's happened.
you've seen. Because I've thought about this. You've
Oh,
seen
no.
the not no, you've seen the nine Skywalker films and you've seen the two live action standalones, but there's technically one movie you have not seen, which
Wait a
I
minute.
purposely what?
No, you're gonna. No. No.
What?
Are you about to tell me that there's a movie I haven't seen?
Technically, yes. However, I knew that if I made you watch it, you would probably be like, never again. I'm not doing this anymore.
My head is literally in my hands. What movie is it?
So, back in 2008, before the first season of Clone Wars came out, a standalone, like, introductory Clone Wars movie came out in the theaters. And it's not good. Like, I'll be, as a very hardcore Clone Wars fan, it's not good. The animation is very rough, but it introduces us to, like, the characters that we'll see in the show. But yeah, it's like an hour and a half long, because it is technically like a kid's movie. But I remember seeing it in the theaters with like a group of boys for like a birthday party.
What is it called?
Clone Wars.
God damn it. Is it an animation?
Yeah, the show's animated.
I've never watched the show.
It's a fucking great show.
I know you like it, but I am not a fan of that style of animation.
Mm. Well, I mean, I don't think anyone was a fan of that particular style of animation that Clone Wars is in at the time. It's very, very blocky and kind of jarring. But I think when you compare the movie, which is the first entity of Clone Wars, all the way to season 7 of Clone Wars, like, clearly Lucasfilm Animation figured it out. They figured out the formula. Because now, like, we have Tales of the Jedi and then Tales of the Empire, which came out today. And then we have Bad Batch, which are in that style. And that style is just beautiful now. So it was kind of like a necessary evil. It had to be made so that it could push the animators to create art. Mm.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, I have watched all the Skywalker films, but I technically have not watched all of the Star Wars films to date.
That is correct.
Okay.
But I will say that that movie isn't a requirement. It's not like the other 11 films that we've talked about.
There's been 11 of them? I've watched 11?
Yeah, 9 Skywalker saga movies and the 2 standalones.
I forgot. You literally just said that, but that just seems like so many movies. You know what? I'm going to watch the Clone Wars film if I can find it. Is it on Disney Plus?
It is on Disney Plus.
I will watch it by the next time we talk, because I don't want anyone out there saying that Leslie didn't technically watch all the films. So okay. I'm going to do it.
Good job.
And just so you know, I recently did a cold water plunge in Mexico and in Montreal, and I hate cold water plunges, but I did it because no one thought I would do it. So there, internet world.
But I hate the thought of you having to compare this Clone Wars movie to a cold plunge, which I wouldn't do.
I did the cold plunge in Montreal 3 times, thank you, because I'm that stubborn. So yes. Moving on.
Well, what was your favorite thing about this movie? Let's start there.
Oh, okay. Well, it's not just my favorite thing about this movie. I believe the best movie scene I have seen in my life, which, side note, I have been obsessed with movies my entire life. I can literally quote movies scene by scene, and not just the lines. I can tell you what people were wearing. I can tell you what movements they will make, and I can tell you what's going to happen next. We've never gotten into that part of my mental illness, but yes, I am crazy. So when I say that this is the best movie scene of all time, I really, really mean it. My favorite scene in this film is when they're in the desert and Rey, they're all in the scavenger guys. What's his name? Ends up being a murderer. They're in his, I was going to say boat. It's not a boat, but they're in his ship. And Rey goes down into the sand because she senses that Kylo is coming. Do you know what scene I'm talking about?
Oh, do I know what scene you're talking about?
the next like 3 or 4 minutes, maybe even longer, that's the best scene I've ever seen in my life, because she senses he's coming, but instead of like hiding or trying to find a way out of it, that bitch faces him head on with her back turned, thank you very much. And then Kylo is screaming down the freaking desert to come for her, and she does that crazy ass backflip over his X-wing. Is that right? Is that what
his TIE fighter?
TIE fighter, thank you. Over his TIE fighter, and basically chops the damn thing in half. Like, what? What? And then he crashes, and then she's like, holy shit, did I just do that? Yeah, you did, right? And then you see him walking, like, oh my god. That whole scene, like, I could just watch it on repeat. Like, if I had a way to make that something that just repeats on my phone all the time, I would, because that is my favorite scene of all time, of all movies, in the 48 years that I've been on this planet. I am done. That's it.
That's a very strong statement.
I don't know. There's like so many, oh, there's just so many like emotions going on, and she's so powerful but vulnerable, and Kylo is crazy pissed off at her because of what happened in the previous film, and he's literally losing his shit and destroying people and very pissed, literally tearing himself apart, and he is coming to get her, and she's like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be right here waiting for you. So very, very big like feminism power for me in that scene too. So I like it. What about you, Fennec? What's your favorite scene?
I would say my favorite scene is, spoilers for the end, when Ben crawls out of the hole to go to Rey, and he basically like saves her life by using force healing, and then they kiss, and then he dies. But every time I watch the movie, I just turn it off after they kiss, because I'm like, yes, nothing bad has ever happened to these two characters.
Now, that's really interesting that you find that's your favorite scene, because I think, as some people would probably agree, I'm definitely the romantic out of the two of us. Like, I am a sucker for a rom-com, and I do love, I mean, that's like my second favorite scene, where they kiss and then he dies, which I get that you don't want to see that part. But
yeah.
I still have to go with Rey being a badass in the desert. But that scene's so tragic. It's just so, it would be like at the end of Pride and Prejudice, which, as you know, is one of my other favorite movies, if Mr. Darcy, instead of telling Lizzie that he loved her and they got together, he was just like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm good. I'm gonna go jump off into my moor and drown or something like that. Like, it just tears your heart into two, that scene.
Well, do you want me to make it worse?
Oh God. No, I don't know. Sure.
So it's just a passage from the novelization, because as we all know, every time we talk about these movies, I have to be like, the novelization says this. But I really like the way that this scene is written in the book, because it talks a lot about like why Ben force heals her, and it gives a lot of context of what happens after he dies and his body disappears and it's just her in the tunic, because it kind of, the next couple of scenes are kind of chopped together really quickly of just her leaving Exegol, getting back on the planet where the resistance are, and then everyone's hugging and crying and stuff like that.
Which is the worst scene in that entire movie. Thank you.
Yeah, because you literally just had the most tragic scene, and then they're like, yippee, the Emperor's gone. And it's like,
all great.
Yeah, it's like, no, can we just talk about, like, the trauma that just happened? And I remember the first time I saw the movie, you know, like, Ben crawls out of the hole and everyone's like cheering. They're like, yeah. And he like goes towards Rey, and then he saves Rey and they kiss. And then, like, you know, he falls down and his body starts disappearing. And everyone around me was like, what the fuck? Like, everyone was just so confused. And then, like, they kept being confused for the rest of the movie because they were like, did that shit just happen? And we're not going to like talk about it.
Yeah. And then they pull like a reboot of the Ewok party at the end of this movie, where people are just like jamming out to some crazy ass music, playing flutes and hugging each other. Like, was that actually part of the film, or did they like was that? I don't know. It just doesn't match. It just doesn't flow in the timeline of the film.
Well, the scene where Ben saves Rey was actually a reshoot.
Really?
Yeah, that was one of, like, the last reshoots. They have been really finicky about saying what was or was not originally shot. Mm-hmm. So the only way we know that was reshoot was Daisy Ridley said it in an interview recently when she was being asked about, like, her career with Star Wars and then the new film that she's a part of. But yeah, that kind of changed my perspective, because then it was a bit of, like, okay, like, what was the original story supposed to be? Like, did... I don't know. There's so many possibilities to it.
Hmm. Interesting.
But yeah, like, in... Like, I'll read this brief part, because then we'll talk about, like, the very ending of the movie, where she's on Tatooine. But it's after he disappears, and she goes... She did not mourn Kylo Ren. She would never mourn Kylo Ren. But she dearly would have loved the chance to get to know Ben Solo. It had felt like half of her was missing, and she supposed it was. The girl who had felt alone for all these years on Jakku had been a part of a dyad the whole time. And just when she discovered that precious connection, that incredible oneness, it was ripped away from her. Like, are you kidding me?
I could start crying right now. That's so, oh my God, that's so horrible.
And then, like, to think about, you know, her being alone on Jakku since she was a kid, and finally feeling like she felt whole for once, and it's ripped away from her, and she doesn't really get this chance to explore her relationship with Ben Solo, because they only have, like, what, minutes together since he's been redeemed. And then to think that, you know, at the end of the movie where she goes to Tatooine and buries the lightsabers, and she takes on the mantle of Skywalker and becomes Rey Skywalker, of like, that's the closest she's ever felt to belonging to someone or somewhere. And people are like, Rey's not a Skywalker. Did you literally just hear what she just said?
Mm-hmm.
She literally just said she's a Skywalker. Mm-hmm. So, if you have seen the movies, you can't really argue with that. And I know it's in the book, it talks a lot more about it, of what Leia's, like, legacy is, because her legacy is the general, like, leader part of her. The Organa part of her goes to Poe, because she's been coaching him and showing him what it means to be a leader. And then the Skywalker side of her goes to Rey, right? Because it's, you know, the last of the Jedi. The thing that we explore in this entire sequel trilogy is that the Skywalkers are kind of it. They're kind of the last Jedi, as the second film in the sequel trilogy literally tells us. So it's one of those things where, why would you want the Skywalker, just because the Skywalker saga, like, the movies are ending, why would you want the Skywalker name to end? Also, this movie is literally called The Rise of Skywalker. I'm getting defensive about it because I've gotten in a lot of disagreements with people where, you know, they're actively angry about it still, even though the movie's been out for almost 5 years, are still very upset about it. And I'm like, why is this a hill that you're willing to die on?
Mm.
I don't know. What do you think about her being a Skywalker?
I mean, it just makes sense to me, even beyond Leia. Like, Luke gave her as much knowledge as he could. Like, he passed on that legacy to her as well. So now you have Luke and Leia passing on their legacy. But what's in a name? You know, I don't want to, like, go off on another tangent that's not really related to Star Wars, but I've been thinking a lot about this lately of what is in a name? Like, even what's in a bloodline? Shouldn't your family be who you most identify with, or who cares for you the most, or who honors you as an individual the most? That's who your family should be. That's who your bloodline should be. And that's where Rey found it, was with the Skywalker family. You know, I believe she honors the sacrifices her parents made for her after she just learned about him. And she's only hasn't even been able to process that either. But when she says that at the end, again, it's just like a slam dunk in the storyline for her to me, that's who she is. I, of course, wish there was more about her. You know, I wish there was another set of trilogy movies just about her, or even just one more, but I'm willing to accept.
Which we're getting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not really about her though, right?
I mean, it's about her rebuilding the Jedi Order.
Oh.
So we'll probably, I think it's set 10 years after Rise of Skywalker. So we'll see a more mature Rey, someone that has been living with the Skywalker name and like what that means to her. We'll get to see.
Hmm. Well, I like that. I like how it ended. I don't like the party scene in the woods. That drives me nuts. But other than that, I think it's really good. I do want to mention one other scene, though, which I remember while we were watching it, when everybody thought Chewie died on the ship. You know, when Rey and Kylo are doing their pissing match with their force fields or whatever it is. And Rey thinks she can control it and bring it down. And then it literally like pulls the ship apart and makes it explode. And we all think Chewie died. And I remember everyone in the theater was like, what just happened? Did Chewie just die? Like, I'm pretty sure I started crying at that point. But then they so quickly show him on the ship. I think because they knew, like, we couldn't handle it. Like, the human species literally could not handle Chewie being dead. So, good job, JJ, for making sure that we all realized really quickly that he was not dead. But that scene's pretty powerful, too, to me.
Yeah, during my rewatch, I thought about that a lot, of, like, what that scene must have been like for people that grew up with the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, you know, if you lost Han in Force Awakens, you lost Luke in Last Jedi, and then up to this point, we haven't lost any more original trilogy characters, but we lose Chewie. Like, I would love to know what the movie would have been like if he actually died.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have been horrible for Rey to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the best part and the best reason about him staying alive is that when Leia dies, I don't know if you ever noticed this, when they like Finn, Poe, and Chewie get back on the planet and they're like, we need to go see the general. And they're like, the general's dead. And just how in turmoil Chewie is about that. Like, yeah, is literally like rolling on the ground, like sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is the best acting I have seen in this film.
I do remember that. He's completely distraught. And he's known her longer than anybody else in this film, you know?
Yeah.
Like 60 years or close to it. Because how old was Leia in the first film? Wasn't she only like 17?
19.
Luke, okay. 19. So, oh, poor Chewie. Poor Chewie. Oh, and one other poor person, General Hux, again, needed a big hug in this film, but not because he was sad, but because he actually did something pretty, pretty nice for some people.
Yeah, how did you feel about him being the spy?
I had totally blocked that part out until I was rewatching it, and I was like, oh my God, I want to give you a hug, you sweet little baby. You did such a good job being the spy. No, I totally loved it. Of course, he was doing it for himself. It wasn't like he was, you know, I don't know.
That he actually cared.
Yeah, or trying to save a bunch of babies somewhere or something like that. But I thought that was a great twist. And it just adds more. There's always a vein of humor going through all of the films. And I felt like that was one more time. That was really funny. Now, I didn't like that he died and got punished. But, you know, that's okay. That's okay. I can handle it.
See, I feel like if we ever go to like a convention together, I don't think he's ever really met people, but you know, that could change. I feel like I need to buy you a meet and greet with Donald Gleason.
Oh my God.
So you could be like, I love you.
And I could wear my Hugs for Hux shirt. Well, does he actually go to those though?
I don't know. I can't remember him at Celebration 2021. I feel like most of the main cast don't really do those. Like, I think the most famous person that was doing meet and greets in 2021 was like Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, I don't want to see Hayden Christensen. No, I wouldn't mind seeing Ewan McGregor. No.
You don't want to see Hayden.
No. Do you like him?
Yeah, he's Anakin Skywalker.
Oh, God. When he shows back up in the movie. Well, which movie was that? Two movies ago? Or no, was it in this last one? When does he show back up? When are
like,
all the...
Like,
which movie is it where all the ghosts show back up? That's in this movie, right?
That's Return of the Jedi. When they were partying with the Ewoks, and then...
Oh, yes.
Yoda, Obi-Wan, and Anakin show up.
Yes. Terrible.
Listen, I was rewatching Attack of the Clones the other day, and I know we have talked about George Lucas's writing and just how interesting it is.
Mm.
But, like, Hayden gets to say lines like, I'm haunted by the kiss you never should have given me. And I'm like, I don't know. There's something about his character. I'm fascinated with his character growth from Attack of the Clones to Revenge of the Sith. Because by the time we get to Revenge of the Sith, you know, there's those 3 years that are unaccounted for. And we see a completely different Anakin. And I'm fascinated with the character choices that Hayden makes for Anakin during that time. Because at this point, you have to remember, we don't have Clone Wars yet. So we don't actually get to see Anakin, like, during the war, his, like, continuous fall to the dark side. So it seems pretty quick when we watch Revenge of the Sith, right? Like, in 2 hours, you're like, wait a minute. Why is he bad all of a sudden? And I think that, and then I've been rewatching Kenobi, and his performance in that is so good. And I'm like, yes, they were wrong about you, Hayden. They were always wrong.
Well, I mean, I don't know when I'm going to be watching Kenobi. So I'll just have to take your word for it.
I mean, I think you should watch it because Ewan McGregor's in it. Isn't that reason enough?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I'll get you there. I'll warm you up to it.
There's so many things on my to-do list, but anyway, getting back to the movie, another big scene that I really, really loved is where Rey goes to the Death Star, the second Death Star or whatever. Mm-hmm. That whole series of scenes was really good, where she and Kylo start fighting. And then they get tired and they're like, hold on, time out. I got to take a break. And then they start fighting again. And then Rey stabs Kylo. Like, holy shit. Like, I've been mad at Papa a couple times, but I've never wanted to stab him. Like, what? What?
Well, especially after he has his, like, kind of Mr. Darcy in the rain scene. Oh, he's, God, like, walking towards her and he's drenched. I'm like, yeah, JJ, you knew what you were doing.
Like, nobody needs to know how sexy I think he is in that scene, but he is pretty sexy in that scene. So, but yes, excellent scene. But then excellent she heals scene. Him. But now that brings up a question for me, though. So if she passes life force to him in that scene, and then she heals him again at the end, and then he heals her, are they passing the chloroform thingies? What are they called?
Midichlorians?
Mitochondrian? What?
Midichlorians.
God, it's been so long since we talked about those. The BBs. Like, are they passing those back and forth? Is it like DNA?
No. So, I'm trying to think of a way to explain this. So, right before that passage that I read to you from the book, it talks about Ben prying himself out of the hole and crawling towards her, and he's got like broken ribs and a broken leg, and he's just really fucked up. And he gets to her, and he senses like the tiniest bit of force. So like she looks dead, but the force hasn't claimed her yet. Like there's still something there. And he's like, I've never force healed before. Like, I don't really know how to do it. But he's like, I do know that Rey was able to do it. And she, like, showed me how to give. Mm. And I think that that's a really interesting part of their relationship, is it shows how compassionate Rey is, of that she's able to show someone like Kylo, who's so just caught up in his trauma and his anger, that she can show him a moment of true compassion and gratitude, to the point that, you know, then a couple minutes later when we get to the scene, he's like, I'm not very confident. Like, this is the first time he's been in like the light side of the Force for years, pretty much like 9 or 10 years. But he's like, but Rey showed me how to give, and I can do it too. So it's a bit of like, I think the Force healing is more metaphorical than it is literal.
Oh, okay.
It's definitely, it's a technique that was introduced in Legends in the books. It's a little different because like Force healing was definitely something that was taught with the Jedi Order. Not a lot of people could do it. It was really hard to do it and to maintain it. And so people are like, how did Rey know how to do that? Blah, blah, blah. Bitch, it's a metaphor. Like, just calm down. God, I will defend this woman within an inch of my life.
And
anyone that talks badly of her, I can't. I can't deal with it.
We've got to meet her somehow without being stalkers. I have to think about that.
Yeah, I'll think about you.
Just back to that scene when Han Solo shows up. Jesus.
Oh, I cry every time.
Jesus fucking Christ! If you can watch this film and make it through without shedding one tear, you're not a true Star Wars fan. I said it.
Damn. You're right, though.
There's no way even the biggest dill hole that hates Rey, that hates Kylo, but claims to be a true Star Wars fan, that has all of these old school nasty looking tattoos of Star Wars on their bodies from like 30 years ago, that named their dog Leia or whatever. Boy, I'm really thinking of somebody very specific right now.
Or Chewie.
Or Chewie or whatever. Like, there is no way you can call yourself a true Star Wars fan and not shed at least some moisture from your eye in this movie, specifically in this scene when Han shows back up. Like, I didn't have a father and I still cried in that scene. Like, it's just, I mean, wow. And then, of course, the Chewie scene, too. Like, if you didn't get upset during that scene, you're not human. Not only are you not a Star Wars fan, you're not even human.
I'm so glad that you brought up the Han Solo scene, though, because, like, what excellent acting from Adam Driver. I mean, it's always excellent. But, like, oh, when he says dad and he just, you can tell, like, he starts crying and then Han says, I know. I'm like, that's what Star Wars is about. It's about love. Because that dad says so much. It's, I'm sorry. I love you. You know, I know you think I can do this, but I'm not sure. Because I just think about in The Force Awakens when he's on the bridge with Han and he says, I know what I have to do, but I don't know if I have the strength to do it. And, like, this is that moment for him. Like, this is really, like, he really needs someone to be like, you do. Like, you're strong enough. You have the ability to do what you need to do. And being a mentally ill person who had seen this movie 10 times, at that time, I was like, oh, my God. Like, I know what I have to do, and I know I have the strength to do it. Like, that. And it was so uplifting for me at that time. Like, isn't that what Star Wars is about?
Yeah. It's literally called a fantasy, but it's a way for us to take something that is not necessarily real, but apply it to our own life.
That's deep.
You're welcome. I will say, though, one last thing. The trick they do with the lightsabers when they kill Palpatine, you know, where the one turned?
Yeah.
And, like, shot through him?
Or Snoke?
Snoke, sorry. Oh, my God. Yeah. The namesake of our freaking podcast. Jesus Christ. Anyhow, I love that. I love that scene. So clever.
See, that makes me curious now, after watching all of these movies, what has been your, like, favorite Star Wars moment?
Other than my favorite scenes in this movie, which is my favorite movie, my favorite Star Wars moments is doing the podcast with you, babe.
Aw. Aw, shucks.
I know. I love doing it.
Yeah, I love doing this with you too.
And I love hearing and getting feedback from our listeners. Even if it's sometimes not necessarily that positive, I'm always really interested to see what people think. And then I also love hearing from people that have known me my entire life or people that have known you your entire life and just telling us that they really like to hear our voices, which is funny since I sound like Minnie Mouse. But
I love Minnie Mouse.
I know. But it's just... Yeah, that's been my favorite Star Wars moment. It's not really Star Wars, but kind of Star Wars. What about you? What's been your favorite Star Wars moment teaching me all about these films?
I think we talked about it a lot in the sequels, about the sort of like mysticism of Star Wars and the... like sociopolitical, like interactions that Star Wars has with like our day-to-day lives.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that a lot of our discussion about like feminism in Star Wars has been just really gratifying to hear. And I don't know, it's one of those things where I think you and I have a pretty different parent-child relationship than a lot of people normally do. I think we're both very open about talking about hard subjects. And I don't know, it's really nice to know that there's a lot that we agree on, and that, I don't know, you're not like a surprise Trumper or something. So that's...
Oh, absolutely not.
But I think now I'm interested, once we continue doing more Star Wars podcasts and exposing you to more Star Wars media, I'm just very interested to kind of see what you end up finding as your home, and, you know, what media speaks to you the most, because there is media that I haven't exposed you to yet that I think I connect with the most. And I don't know, I'm just interested to see what you think. I mean, you could completely disagree with it, and like, that's totally okay. But I think that's the beauty of Star Wars, is that there's something out there for everyone. And yeah, it might take you a while to find it because there's just so much goddamn material to get through. But I truly believe that there is something for everyone within this fandom.
Don't you remember what my next Star Wars obsession is going to be about?
Oh God, no, what?
The sexy fan fiction.
Oh, true. Yeah. For listeners, I did send Leslie an introduction to Reylo fan fiction. So maybe I just need to send you a book.
Reylo. And I
think that's what yeah, that's the ship name.
Oh my God. And wait a minute. Sophie taught me ship. Ship is shipping characters together as a couple.
Yes. Good job.
I listen to y'all. Yeah. I'm going to be interested to read that fan fiction. Because to coin a Tina from Bob's Burgers phrase, it's erotic fan fiction, right?
It can be.
Aw, come on.
No, there's some, I'm saying that there's something for everyone. Literally, like...
for everyone.
If there is a type of fanfic that you want in this world, it exists somewhere on the internet.
Maybe I'll write my own fan fiction.
Well, I've written fan fiction before. It's very lovely.
Well, on that note, so as I've discovered, I have one more film to watch before our next podcast, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's cool. And then what else should I prepare for next time? What else would you like me to start watching? I mean, let's be honest. I'm not going to be able to watch all of the cartoons. Like, I'm just not going to be able to. So.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, you've watched Mando. Why don't you do that? Why don't we start with Mando? Because that was technically like the first Disney Plus TV show that came out. So it's the first live action Star Wars TV show that we got. So I feel like that's a really good place to start. And you already like it. And I mean, you love Grogu, so.
I mean, I do like Grogu, but there are other characters on that show that I also really like. So I will rewatch all of the Mando before our next podcast.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks again for another awesome time with your mommy.
Yeah, but I couldn't ask for anything better.
Aw, I love you, babe.
Love you too.
Well, until next time.
May the Force be with you.
And also with you. Bye, babe.
Bye.